outside in the park. I'm grateful that it's a nice day and that I'm learning how to navigate this mic, so bear with me if I make any mistakes. I'm just here for the party and to share my experience and strength and hope. My sobriety day is September 29th, 2021. So I like to say that I have a solid 2 years. What it was like. Well, I come from a long line of alcoholics or addicts in some way, shape, or form. I'm first generation Romanian, so my parents escaped communism. They came here. They met. They had my brother and they had me. And I thought I was different than everybody in my family, in the sense that I had a chip on my shoulder. I thought I could evade this disease. And when I came to the rooms as a newcomer, I had a really hard time with the word disease and alcoholism, and my ego was through the roof. I still thought that my life was manageable, even though I had crushed my car into a concrete light pole and I fled the scene. And, you know, it was it was perfectly manageable, right? You know, but that was my bottom and how I qualify. And what took the things that had took me to that point was the way I've heard it being described is everybody talks about how it was fun, and then it was fun with problems, and then it was problems. Well, for me, it was fun for a very long time throughout my career. And then towards the end, it was just problem after problem after problem. And there was no fun with problems. So I skipped the middle and jumped to the end. I think I heard this speaker one time, and she, it was like on YouTube. And she was talking about how when people say when they have their first drink, they feel this warm sensation and they feel at home. And for me, I didn't resonate with that, and neither did she. What I resonated with was what she said, that alcohol, the chains were like too soft until they were too heavy to be broken. And that's how I resonated with it. It really saved me for that time being. And I didn't understand what it meant to be like hopeless, mind, body, and soul, like what it talks about in the book, until you people taught me. And when I went to my first meeting at Serenity Hall, I saw they have the 12 steps and the 12 traditions on the wall. And I was sitting in the back. It was a Monday night participation meeting. There was like five of us in the meeting, including the secretary. And I was like, wow, if this is gonna be the rest of my life, doesn't look fun. And when they were going through all the steps, I thought that I had done them all basically in my mind, right? I was just so closed off to whatever you know, people were going to show me how to live better. And I was just so stubborn and like very narrow-minded. And the one thing they told me was keep coming back. And I eventually had the chance to go to this other meeting, which was a Friday night beginner basics meeting. And I heard this woman sharing, and I really liked what she had to say. And she talked about how she got her bachelor's degree. And then the next week she shared and was like, oh, I have 3 years sober. And the week after that, it was just like accomplishment after accomplishment. I'm like, how can you do all this and achieve all that? You know, like we're supposed to be like the bottom of the barrel. We can only go down from here, not up. That was my mindset. And she showed me there was hope, and not like the materialistic type of hope, but to solve internally here, like, and understand why we do the things that we do, right? And I eventually mustered up the courage and I said, hey, do you want to be my sponsor? And right away she was like, well, you're going to have to do this, this, this. Call me every day. Send me a gratitude list. We're going to start reading together. And I was like, oh, well, I've already read up to chapter 4. I have my own big book. I've done all of this. And she's like, that's great, but we're going to start over. And I needed someone to just bring me back down to earth really quick. And take me through page by page and really absorb everything, because like I said, I thought I had it all figured out. And it's really crazy because before the meeting, we were having a conversation, and the whole thing was kind of geared upon that it's okay not to know. It's okay to not know everything. We don't have to be experts. And I was taught too that when you join this program, you never graduate. Like, there's no end goal. You don't get your certificate and you run off into the real world and you're cured, you know?
Damn.
I know, right? Free pass. No, just kidding. But I think the beautiful gift about this program is not just my story, because my story keeps me sober, but being able to hear everybody else's story. And the most important thing is being able to give back to other people. We were also talking about that it's not just within the rooms, the people that we get to be of service with, but also like the people who saw us that we caused the most harm to. Those are the people that, although I've made my formal amends to, it's daily, every single day. What can I do to be there for my family members, my friends? How to be a good employee, you know, showing up to work, even when I don't want to, not just calling out because I just don't feel like it today. Being reliable and responsible. And I could not do this on my own. It's definitely through the mentorship of my sponsor, through the women I work with, that I get to be there in their lives and take them through the steps. And most importantly for me, I feel like if I had nobody else on the planet, it's my higher power. That's the one person for me that God could and would if he were sought. And no human power can save me from my alcoholism. And as much as I want to rely on external people, and we were made to create and be with one another and fellowship, at the end of the day, when I'm home alone, or if, you know, I call a bunch of people and no one answers, the one person I can call upon for me that is always going to be there, even if I physically don't see him, is my higher power. And that's gotten me through a lot of different ups and downs in my sobriety. And the one thing I used to always hear, there's this gentleman that we're friends with who's in the program. He has a significant amount of time that he likes to share from the podium often, and quote is page 98. And I always would ask him, like, why that page? And he's like, go and read it. Don't just listen to me quote it. So I sat there and I read it, and I was like, wow, that's truly right, which is to essentially, you know, burn into the consciousness that any one of us can get well, regardless of anyone else, so long as that we trust God, clean house, and help others. And I was like, wow, that's so much more powerful when you read it, other than just hear someone say it. And I take that with me because in it of myself, I'm nothing, but I know that when you combine all those three things together, I could be of maximum usefulness to other people. And that's really what it's all about, is to help me get out of me and be there for others. So it's a lifelong journey, and I am excited to see where it continues to take me. So thank you for letting me share.
All right.
And up next is our main speaker.
Wow. All right. No breaks. No breaks.
No breaks.
No breaks.
No breaks.
No breaks.
That was awesome. My name's Andrew. I'm an alcoholic.
Andrew.
Very grateful to be in a meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous today on a beautiful Saturday, Friday evening. I love Les. I get the opportunity to work on his house. You know, it's all things that's given to me through God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got some friends I haven't seen in a couple of days, you know, that we go to the same meetings. My buddy Nick back there. Rocker Jerry, you know, I haven't seen him in a couple of weeks till months. For me, I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous October 28, 2013, at, you know, the tender age of like 24 to 25, and had a long career of just drinking and using. You know, a little bit about me when I was a young lad. You know, my father committed suicide. He was one of us, and never got the proper help for it. I just kind of hid it well till it just became straight problems and in and out of jails and institutions. And, you know, I'm thankful. I'm very thankful for a lot of that stuff that I went through. I would definitely not be where I'm at now. You know, I got, you know, family and friends and loved ones and a beautiful woman that I could trudge with, you know, that helps keep me grounded. Daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual maintenance, a sponsor that keeps me accountable, a brotherhood that keeps me accountable. It's all things that I was looking for, you know, when I was in the streets, as grandma would say, even up to the day she passed last year, making travieso, you know, and I got to make an amends to that woman, and she got to see me sober before she passed for, you know, the last 9 years of her life. And for me, you know, an old timer once told me it's not the sorries and I won't do this again or that again. It's your actions, you know, let your actions speak. Prior to sobriety, you know, I would have never made it to Les's house to work on it. I would have, you know, stolen stuff and just lied, cheated my way through life like I did. And I get the beautiful opportunity now to be accountable, respectful, relied upon. You know, I get my kids every other weekend. I get to be in their lives. I get to help them with schoolwork. And it wasn't always like that. You know, I did some jail time for domestic violence. I did some jail time for not showing completion of anger management, you know. I got the opportunity to get a year of sobriety. And then after that year, you know, I'm working with my sponsor, you know, because I worked with him. He was my boss. And we were coming back from lunch. We were doing step work. I'm on my fourth step. And then we get pulled over. And then they're like, you're going to jail, you know, and being sober, you know, a whole year of sobriety at the time, I was like, why me? You know, I still had that, like, yeah, wreckage of my past that I, you know, had to continue dealing with. And you know, it was going through those opportunities and also being around, you know, some old timers that, like, showed me how to show up. They show me how to continuously just not drink no matter what. And, you know, for me, it's big because I felt like that wiggle room for me to do whatever it is I wanted to do, to lie, deceit, was just gone. It evaporated, you know. My drinking got me kicked out of my mother's house where I was living at the time. And, you know, I lived in my car for about a month or two till it got towed, got repoed, you know, because the alcohol was just that much more important to me, you know, than paying for diapers, you know, than you know, making sure my son was fed at the time. And, you know, now whenever that young man calls, it's just like, you know, I pick it up or I respond to his text message, and I never miss out on opportunities with being around family because it's highly important to me. You know, giving back to, you know, my fellow man, when I read that, I always interpreted it as not just the people in the rooms, you know, it's everybody I come across, you know, whether I'm at the grocery store or whatsoever, you know, and it's for me, it's funny because when I was young, you know, and I was always with grandma all the time, you know, whether it was yard work or, you know, going and helping her at the grocery store. I would always see her give, you know, to the homeless and give to the less fortunate, you know, and I would ask her, like, what are you doing that for? You know? And she would always say, Milo, you never know when you encounter an angel. You know, and I didn't know how to interpret that at that time. And, you know, now in life, I just, you know, I feel over these last 10 years, I've got in, you know, highly connected and very one-on-one with my higher power that, you know, I never hear a voice. I just get these weird urges, you know, in my stomach where I'm like, that person needs, you know, a helping hand. And, it's great because it's stuff that like that I've done throughout the whole 10 years of my program of just being there for others. I got a real cool group of guys, you know, a nice tight clique, as I like to say, and we hold each other accountable. You know, that's the most I ever asked for, because growing up without a father, that's all I looked for, was that, you know, that bond between, you know, a son and a father. And I found that in these rooms. You know, a lot of the guys I looked up to are you know, have passed away, no longer here, but the messages that they've instilled in me is what's keeping, you know, this going, and I get to pass to my children and, you know, my fellows. The most gnarly thing happened the other day. I was driving home from work. I get this random phone call from a 323 number, and, you know, it's this young kid in a rehab, and he's like, "Can you sponsor me?" And I'm like, "Sure, yeah, no problem." You know what I mean? It's like, I've had sponsors come and go and stuff, and, you know, it just came out of the blue. You know, I got one that continuously works with me right now. I see him every Sunday, but, you know, this just came out of left field. You know, I remember when I got my first sponsee, I was in a dark state of, like, depression. Even being sober, you know, I was like, I kind of don't want to be here anymore. You know, I felt the need not to exist. And what I realized when I talked to my sponsor about it is, like, because you're lacking being active more in your program and helping others. And then once I started helping more, I felt more joyous, you know, not receiving anything, but just giving, you know, my time and my effort more. And it's a big change because, you know, last year was one hell of a year. You know, I lost my grandma, you know, and then a couple months after that, I lost, you know, a close buddy of mine who took his own life. And he was feeling the same way I was feeling a few years back, but didn't talk about it, you know? So it's like two different ends of the spectrum, you know, someone that talked about it as opposed to someone that didn't talk about it. And, you know, my buddy Mikey was one of those people that just give you the shirt off his back. You know, I hear that a lot, but he lived it, you know, but there's just so much deep, dark depression down there. And, you know, I met him a year ago, and, you know, he's one of the reasons why I do jiu-jitsu now. And the group of guys, it's like my sponsor always says, you know, this saying always sticks with me. Some of us have to die for others to live. And, you know, I would always hear that, you know, and yeah, people would always come in my life and leave, but, you know, I never felt it more than last year. And, you know, these times in my life, I would always see and talk to the old timers, and they would always talk about, you know, they hit their knees in the morning and pray. And you know, early on in my program, I think just because I was at a young age, I used to pray, like, I'd get up and I'd lay in bed and I'd just end up falling back asleep, and or I'd be praying on the way to work, you know, help me, please, you know, like, as I'm rushing because I'm just a horrible employee at those times. And just not fully immersing my time, you know, with the Lord and my higher power. And what ended up happening about a year ago, I just got these crazy urges to, like, do 200 push-ups a day. And prior, before I do them, I get on the floor, I get on my knees, I pray, you know, for about 20 to 30 minutes, you know. And it's never anything for myself, which is the most miraculous thing for me, because it was always for me. So I'm more important than anyone in this room. Like, that's how I looked at myself, you know. And it's such a wonderful thing to pray for others, you know what I mean? And then, you know, like my mother, for example, she's operating, her kidney's operating at like 19%, and she has to get put on dialysis. But prior to that, she was in the hospital for like 10 to 12 days, I think it was. And, you know, she slowly started getting better. And all I did was visit her, make her laugh, and pray. You know, so there has always been truth and value within, you know, God or a form of higher power or whatever it is you want to believe in. But I like to say God. Heavenly Father or whatever. And, you know, for a long time I used Baby Jesus. That was another one. But I just like to call him God now. And it's such a powerful thing. You know what I mean? I get all these crazy opportunities. And nothing like this would have ever happened if I never, ever just fully gave myself to this program. But it wasn't easy, you know? I had the stubbornness of a mule. And, you know, I was restless, irritable, and discontent for the first 4 years of my sobriety, doing minimum to no work. Sometimes nothing at all. Just going to a meeting. You know what I mean? Going to a meeting, scowling at everybody, and then just leaving. And just in my head being like, this place sucks. You know what I mean? I don't have nothing to relate to. They're all old and this and that. And wah, 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 cry me a river. And there was a lot of times where I, like, you know, when I first got to the rooms, I didn't work. Didn't have a job. My car was repoed. I had a skateboard and a backpack. And I skated to the La Puente Center at 6 a.m. for the early risers meeting. And I stayed there all day, and I was on a court card because my son's mother at the time was like, he's a drunk, he's an alcoholic, and he's abusive. And I was just looking at the judge like, no, I'm not. She does methamphetamine, you know? And they're like, oh, you're bad. And that moment, that person saved my life because they did for me what I couldn't do for myself, which was tell the truth. And I got put on a court card, and my bright idea was, I'll be on this court card for 6 months. You know, I'll get everybody off my back. I'll get accepted back into the family, and I won't be the black sheep anymore. And everything will be okay, and I'll just go back to drinking, because I wasn't doing anything bad. And that was all a lie, and that was just me looking for a continuous wiggle room and not trying to look for growth or add any kind of weight or depth or value, not just into my lives, but the lives of those around me. And it was terrible. It was a terrible way of thinking. And, you know, about before October, I think I came in, I don't know, like around January or something like that. And and I remember being on this court card. And, you know, when they would do the chips, they would say, does anybody got 30 days? And I'd raise my hand, I got 30 days. And I didn't even have 30 seconds. You know, if I walked out of the room, you could hear my backpack just clickety clank as I would run out, you know, and that's how I, you know, that's how I did my get down for a while. And then I slowly started, you know, hearing similarities in people's stories in regards to like emotion and not feeling worthy of, and a lot of self-worth, and, you know, just that connection spiritually, you know, not the physical stuff, but just the spiritual stuff, you know, just spiritually broken and bankrupt. And I started realizing that, like, my true rock bottom was just that, you know. It wasn't the jail and the institutes, it was how I felt on the inside. And you know, I started working with somebody, and that person took me to a group of guys on Monday nights, and we did book studies and potlucks. And you know, from there, my life started taking off, but at a snail's pace, because I was still like, I don't want to tell this person all the dirty things I did, you know? I want to try to save a little bit of face. And you can't do that, you know? You can't save your face and your butt at the same time, you know? And you gotta just find that one person, you know what I mean? And over the years, I've learned that, you don't have to like everybody, but you have to love everybody, and you have to find that one, two, or three persons that you're like, hey, this is what I need help with in this moment of my life, you know. And it took 10 years to find, you know, a group of guys like that, because, you know, some people just don't stick around, you know. They tend to drift off, or friendships fade away. But if you see that person in the room again, you're like, oh my God, I missed you, and this and that. And it's a brotherhood, you know, in a familyhood that I've always, you know, imagined. Those first, like, year or two, I didn't go to Christmas at mom and dad's or my aunt's or anything like that. They were all at the La Puente Center, you know, Christmas with the drunks, you know. And it was a great time. It was potlucks, and there was Halloween parties and New Year's parties. And it kind of helped me get reacclimated to, like, going and being around family when those social events did happen, and I did start getting invited back to the family. And now it's, I like to go back and forth because it's, my story is a lot of like, we hate you, never come back again. So like, are you going to be here? It's so-and-so's birthday and it's this and it's that. And can you bring this and can you bring that? And it's like, all I ever do is just say yes. I show up and I do it all over again. And, you know, when a family member or friend calls, I pick up the phone and I say, let me see if I could get out of work. You know, let me see if I could do this. Let me move this around. Let me move that around. You know, it's just being reliable and being accountable, you know, being very disciplined. That's, for me, a lot of, as a young man, that's a lot of important things. That's things I try to teach my children and my kids. And, you know, there's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately. And, you know, it's this prayer, and it's like, God says, who shall I send? You know, and I say, here am I, send me. You know, and I think that's from Isaiah, verse Isaiah chapter 6. And, you know, it's just something that popped into my head, and I've been thinking about it a lot lately. And then if you look at, like, the way I try to do life now, the way my higher power has it laid out, it's like everything's already written. You just got to walk through it. And, you know, and I try to walk through things with like that whole faith without works is dead mentality. And I always do everything, you know, for everybody without expecting anything in return. There's times, you know, where it's just not pretty and it's not perfect. And in the back of my mind, it's like, I don't want to do this, you know, I don't want to do that. And I sit in bed sometimes. I'll wake up at, like, you know, anywhere from 4 a.m. to 5 a.m. and I'll just sit there for like 20 minutes. And then I remind myself, like, you can't do this. You know what I mean? And you can't rest this early. You could rest at the end. And you know, I got all these little mantras and sayings and that I like to live by that help me, you know. I didn't get this program very fast. You know, I was a, you know, a lying chip taker. And that's how I did my program for a while until I, you know, finally went balls to the wall and threw it all away and got kicked out of the house. And then it was like I fought tooth and nail to come back, you know, and I just let my actions do the talking. And after that, you know, it's a whole hell of a lot better now. You know, I wouldn't want it any other way. I got keys to a company truck. You know, I got keys to the shop at the company I work for. And, you know, I got a company card. It's crazy, you know. And I'm entrusted with, like, all these different things. And it's just a testament to what this program can do and where it can take you. You know, that's, I believe that's really all I got. I want to thank Les for an opportunity to sit and speak. And yeah, that's it. Thanks.
All right.
I'm Les Alcoholic. Give Polly and Andrew a hand for a great meeting. And we need a lot of help cleaning up after the meeting. And we're looking for someone to bring water. Is that right? What else? We need some help. We need a coffee commitment. Anybody out there want to volunteer for coffee? Raise your hand. Get involved. Oh, where? Water? Who's bringing water?
We got a cooler.
We got a cooler?
Yeah.
Who could bring water? We have a cooler. We need some help. Okay. All right.
Not tap water.
we could do this still together, right? That's how we do. We put this on. We appreciate everybody that brings food here every week, and we got some good food. Let's give Tommy a hand for a great cook, and then everybody else for that participates in this meeting. I'm your Grapevine rep, meeting in a print. And this one here is a pretty good one. It's this, the sounds of silence. There's a lot of power in silence. I never realized that. It took me a long time. I'm a slow learner too, Andrew. I'm still learning. I learned something from you tonight. And that's what it's all about, being able to open my ears and listen more than talking, you know. And this is a great one. It's a special edition prayer and meditation. And so what we do is we give this out, you read it, and you bring it back, and then we recirculate it.
Like this, you bring it back.
Thank you so much. So anyway, the sound of silence and prayer and meditation. Who needs it? Who wants it? Come get it. Come on. Somebody has got to want it.
Christine, you want to fight over it?
Oh, Timmy boy.
Rochambeau.
Okay, here's one I just got recycled. Look, the spirit of AA. There's nothing stronger than one drunk talking to another drunk, sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Identification is everything. I mean, it kept me here for years. I mean, I'm not alone. I know that there's someone else on the planet that feels the way I do. When's a spaceship going to land and take me home, you know? But anyway, come on, Tina and Ron, and let's do this raffle.
Pick it up and go.
Let me get my tickets out in my high pocket.
So we need a lot of help afterwards, taking the stuff to the truck and stuff. So, and if you want to volunteer for something, get involved. And don't forget the...
Hi, everyone. I'm Tina. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know if anybody... this is Hal's memorial. It's on the 27th. And there's a Zoom ID and password. And it's from 1 to 4 p.m. It's in Las Vegas, but we can go via Zoom. And this is the intergroup meeting. It's Saturday, not tomorrow, but the next Saturday. It's at 10:30 in the morning, and it's at the 502 Club. Come and support your local central office, your intergroup, and be a representative of your group. If you'd like to be of service, that's a great way to stay sober. Where's Ron?
Ron!
Oh, he's way over there. Okay.
Find a paper hanging out.
Get your tickets out. Thank you so much for participating each week in our raffle, and thank you for coming and bringing something. Thank you so much.
Ron made me.
Jay, come here. Come here, Jerry.
Remember, Ron, the tabbed one.
Hold on.
Take it easy now.
There's a ticket.
All right, good.
Rocker Jerry.
Uh-oh.
Hey, I'm
what?
Rocker. Get it right.
Don't forget. Jay, name a pick on you.
Just do the raffle.
Come on.
Take
care.
Pick a ticket.
Go on. Well, I got to get the goods.
Need some help.
Melba gave us this tonight. It's Legoland. Whoa. We got a great responsibility. It's a history book. In all of our affairs, that's an Al-Anon book. Don't we all need Al-Anon?
Yep.
Yeah, it's the secret to my serenity. Keep my mouth shut and mind my own business. Okay, 0305. 0305. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nick.
Nick's going to go to Camp Sealy and recycle this. What would you like?
In all our affairs.
All right. Nice.
Thank you.
Anybody? Legoland? Okay. 0322.
What?
0322.
Yeah.
All right, Javier.
I got one of my tickets for him.
Oh, you did? Oh, that was nice.
Don't go away. Don't go away, guy.
Okay, what would you like? 12 and 12?
12 and 12.
Came to believe? Our great responsibility?
Our great responsibility.
Wonderful.
Appreciate it.
Okay, we got two more. Okay. 0445. 0445.
I'm taking them all the time, Jay.
Oh, I got 0445 right here.
This is rigged.
Hey, what's that?
This is rigged.
I shaked it up.
It's rigged.
I shaked it up.
No, give it away.
Can't be rigged. I shaked it up.
I won it.
Okay. I shaked it up.
All right. One more. A 12 and 12. And our Legoland.
Lego.
12 and 12 and Legoland.
Lego. 4, 6, 1. 6, 4. Six,
here, I know how to read. Okay, 0460. 0460. All right. He's going to Legoland. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great rest of your day. Right. Thank you guys for letting us be of service, and thank you for supporting our group every week and coming, bringing something, helping us clean up our sobriety station. And we will have somebody read. We will have somebody read the promises and pray us out.
Can you take me back?
You want to read?
Nope.
Okay. Anybody want to read the promises? Come on up. Thank you. We really do appreciate this fellowship that we have here. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming out tonight. Thank you.
Tony Alcoholic. The promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Work, work, work.
Now, after a moment of silence for the alcoholic that still suffers in and out of these parks, the innocent children caught in a crossfire, please join me in the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thy is kingdom, power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Come back, it works!
Thank you,
my
guys.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You crochet?
Yes, I do.
Like a mad lady. Oh, you do?
Yeah, my mom taught me how to knit.
A long time ago?
Ever since I was like, it does. I'll just do it when I watch TV.
Thanks, Andrew.
Sorry about that.
Thank you so much.
What can
I do? The truck just grabbed the chair.
So we're outside in the park. I'm grateful that it's a nice day and that I'm learning how to navigate this mic. So bear with me if I make any mistakes. I'm just here for the party and to share my experience and strength and hope. My sobriety day is September 29th, 2021. So I like to say that I have a solid 2 years. What it was like. Well, I come from a long line of alcoholics or addicts in some way, shape, or form. I'm first generation Romanian, so my parents escaped communism. They came here. They met. They had my brother and they had me. And I thought I was different than everybody in my family in the sense that I had a chip on my shoulder. I thought I could evade this disease. And when I came to the rooms as a newcomer, I had a really hard time with the word disease and alcoholism, and my ego was through the roof. I still thought that my life was manageable, even though I had crushed my car into a concrete light pole and I fled the scene. And, it was perfectly manageable, right? You know, but, that was my bottom and, how I qualify and, what took the things that, had took me to that point was, the way I've heard it being described is everybody talks about how it was fun, and then it was fun with problems, and then it was problems. Well, for me, it was fun for a very long time throughout my career, and then towards the end, it was just problem after problem after problem, and there was no fun with problems. So I skipped the middle and jumped to the end. I think I heard this speaker one time, and she it was like on YouTube, and she was talking about how when people say when they have their first drink, they feel this warm sensation and they feel at home. And for me, I didn't resonate with that, and neither did she. What I resonated with was what she said, that alcohol, the chains were like too soft until they were too heavy to be broken. And that's how I resonated with it. It really saved me for that time being. And I didn't understand what it meant to be like hopeless, mind, body, and soul, like what it talks about in the book, until you people taught me. And when I went to my first meeting at Serenity Hall, I saw they have the 12 steps and the 12 traditions on the wall. And I was sitting in the back. It was a Monday night participation meeting. There was like five of us in the meeting, including the secretary. And I was like, wow, if this is going to be the rest of my life, doesn't look fun. And when they were going through all the steps, I thought that I had done them all basically in my mind, right? I was just so closed off to whatever you know, people were going to show me how to live better. And I was just so stubborn and like very narrow-minded. And the one thing they told me was keep coming back. And I eventually had the chance to go to this other meeting, which was a Friday night beginner basics meeting. And I heard this woman sharing, and I really liked what she had to say. And she talked about how she got her bachelor's degree. And then the next week she shared and was like, oh, I have 3 years sober. And the week after that, it was just like accomplishment after accomplishment. I'm like, how can you do all this and achieve all that? You know, like, we're supposed to be like the bottom of the barrel. We can only go down from here, not up. That was my mindset. And she showed me there was hope, and not like the materialistic type of hope, but to solve internally here, like, and understand why we do the things that we do, right? And I eventually mustered up the courage and I said, hey, do you want to be my sponsor? And right away she was like, well, you're gonna have to do this, call me every day, send me a gratitude list, we're gonna start reading together. And I was like, oh, well, I've already read up to chapter 4. I have my own big book. I've done all this. And she's like, that's great, but we're going to start over. And I needed someone to just bring me back down to earth really quick and take me through page by page and really absorb everything. Because like I said, I thought I had it all figured out. And it's really crazy because before the meeting, we were having a conversation, and the whole thing was kind of geared upon that it's okay not to know. It's okay to not know everything. We don't have to be experts. And I was taught, too, that when you join this program, you never graduate. Like, there's no end goal. You don't get your certificate, and you run off into the real world, and you're cured, you know?
Damn.
I know, right? Free pass. No, just kidding. But I think the beautiful gift about this program is not just my story, because my story keeps me sober, but being able to hear everybody else's story. And the most important thing is being able to give back to other people. We were also talking about that it's not just within the rooms, the people that we get to be of service with, but also, like, the people who saw us that we caused the most harm to. Those are the people that, although I've made my formal amends to, it's daily, every single day. What can I do to be there for my family members, my friends? How to be a good employee, you know, showing up to work, even when I don't want to, not just calling out because, I just don't feel like it today. Being reliable and responsible. And I could not do this on my own. It's definitely through the mentorship of my sponsor, through the women I work with, that I get to be there in their lives and take them through the steps. And most importantly for me, I feel like if I had nobody else on the planet, it's my higher power. That's the one person for me that God could and would if he were sought. And no human power can save me from my alcoholism. And as much as I want to rely on external people, and we were made to create and be with one another and fellowship, at the end of the day, when I'm home alone, or if, you know, I call a bunch of people and no one answers, the one person I can call upon for me that is always going to be there, even if I physically don't see him, is my higher power. And that's gotten me through a lot of different ups and downs in my sobriety. And the one thing I used to always hear, there's this gentleman that we're friends with who's in the program. He has a significant amount of time that he likes to share from the podium often, and quote is page 98. And I always would ask him, like, why that page? And he's like, go and read it. Don't just listen to me quote it. So I sat there and I read it, and I was like, wow, that's truly right, which is to essentially, you know, burn into the consciousness that any one of us can get well, regardless of anyone else, so long as that we trust God, clean house, and help others. And I was like, wow, that's so much more powerful when you read it, other than just hear someone say it. And I take that with me because in it, of myself, I'm nothing, but I know that when you combine all those three things together, I could be of maximum usefulness to other people. And that's really what it's all about, is to help me get out of me and be there for others. So it's a lifelong journey, and I am excited to see where it continues to take me. So thank you for letting me share.
All right.
And up next is our main speaker.
Wow. All right. No breaks.
That was awesome. My name's Andrew. I'm an alcoholic. Very grateful to be in a meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous today on a beautiful Saturday, Friday evening. I love Les. I get the opportunity to work on his house. You know, it's all things that's given to me through God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got some friends I haven't seen in a couple of days, you know, that we go to the same meetings. My buddy Nick back there, Rocker Jerry, you know, I haven't seen him in a couple of weeks till months. For me, I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous October 28th, 2013, at, you know, the tender age of like 24 to 25, and had a long career of just drinking and using. You know, a little bit about me when I was a young lad. You know, my father committed suicide. He was one of us, and never got the proper help for it. I just kind of hid it well till it just became straight problems and in and out of jails and institutions. And, you know, I'm thankful. I'm very thankful for a lot of that stuff that I went through. I would definitely not be where I'm at now. You know, I got, you know, family and friends and loved ones and a beautiful woman that I could trudge with, you know, that helps keep me grounded. Daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual maintenance, a sponsor that keeps me accountable, a brotherhood that keeps me accountable. It's all things that I was looking for, you know, when I was in the streets, as grandma would say, even up to the day she passed last year, making Thrive Yeso, you know, and I got to make an amends to that woman, and she got to see me sober before she passed for, you know, the last 9 years of her life. And for me, you know, an old timer once told me it's not the sorries and I won't do this again or that again. It's your actions, you know, let your actions speak. Prior to sobriety, you know, I would have never made it to Les's house to work on it. I would have, you know, stolen stuff and just lied, cheated my way through life like I did. And I get the beautiful opportunity now to be accountable, respectful, relied upon. You know, I get my kids every other weekend. I get to be in their lives. I get to help them with schoolwork. And it wasn't always like that. You know, I did some jail time for domestic violence. I did some jail time for not showing completion of anger management, you know. I got the opportunity to get a year of sobriety. And then after that year, you know, I'm working with my sponsor, you know, because I worked with him. He was my boss. And we were coming back from lunch. We were doing step work. I'm on my fourth step. And then we get pulled over. And then they're like, you're going to jail, you know, and being sober, you know, a whole year of sobriety at the time, I was like, why me? You know, I still had that, like, yeah, wreckage of my past that I, you know, had to continue dealing with. And you know, it was going through those opportunities and also being around, you know, some old timers that, like, showed me how to show up. They show me how to continuously just not drink no matter what. And, you know, for me, it's big because I felt like that wiggle room for me to do whatever it is I wanted to do, to lie, deceit, was just gone. It evaporated, you know. My drinking got me kicked out of my mother's house where I was living at the time. And, you know, I lived in my car for about a month or two, till it got towed, it got repoed, you know, because the alcohol was just that much more important to me, you know, than paying for diapers, you know, than you know, making sure my son was fed at the time. And, you know, now whenever that young man calls, it's just like, you know, I pick it up or I respond to his text message, and I never miss out on opportunities with being around family because it's highly important to me. You know, giving back to, you know, my fellow man, when I read that, I always interpreted it as not just the people in the rooms, you know, it's everybody I come across, you know, whether I'm at the grocery store or whatsoever, you know, and it's for me, it's funny because when I was young, you know, and I was always with grandma all the time, you know, whether it was yard work or, you know, going and helping her at the grocery store. I would always see her give, you know, to the homeless and give to the less fortunate, you know, and I would ask her, like, what are you doing that for? You know? And she would always say, Milo, you never know when you encounter an angel. You know, and I didn't know how to interpret that at that time. And, you know, now in life, I just, you know, I feel over these last 10 years, I've got in, you know, highly connected and very one-on-one with my higher power that, you know, I never hear a voice. I just get these weird urges, you know, in my stomach where I'm like, that person needs, you know, a helping hand. And it's great because it's stuff that, like, that I've done throughout the whole 10 years of my program of just being there for others. I got a real cool group of guys, you know, a nice tight click, as I like to say, and we hold each other accountable. You know, that's the most I ever asked for, because growing up without a father, that's all I looked for, was that, you know, that bond between, you know, a son and a father. And I found that in these rooms. You know, a lot of the guys I looked up to are you know, have passed away, no longer here, but the messages that they've instilled in me is what's keeping, you know, this going, and I get to pass to my children and, you know, my fellows. The most gnarly thing happened the other day. I was driving home from work. I get this random phone call from a 323 number, and, you know, it's this young kid in a rehab, and he's like, can you sponsor me? And I'm like, sure, yeah, no problem. You know what I mean? It's like, I've had sponsors come and go and stuff, and, you know, it just came out of the blue. You know, I got one that continuously works with me right now. I see him every Sunday, but, you know, this just came out of left field. You know, I remember when I got my first sponsee, I was in a dark state of, like, depression. Even being sober, you know, I was like, I kind of don't want to be here anymore. You know, I felt the need not to exist. And what I realized when I talked to my sponsor about it is, like, because you're lacking being active more in your program and helping others. And then once I started helping more, I felt more joyous, you know, not receiving anything, but just giving, you know, my time and my effort more. And it's a big change because, you know, last year was one hell of a year. You know, I lost my grandma, you know, and then a couple months after that, I lost, you know, a close buddy of mine who took his own life. And he was feeling the same way I was feeling a few years back, but didn't talk about it, you know? So it's like two different ends of the spectrum, you know, someone that talked about it as opposed to someone that didn't talk about it. And, you know, my buddy Mikey was one of those people that just give you the shirt off his back. You know, I hear that a lot, but he lived it, you know, but there's just so much deep, dark depression down there. And, you know, I met him a year ago, and, you know, he's one of the reasons why I do jiu-jitsu now. And the group of guys, it's like my sponsor always says, you know, this saying always sticks with me. Some of us have to die for others to live. And, you know, I would always hear that, you know, and yeah, people would always come in my life and leave, but, you know, I never felt it more than last year. And, you know, these times in my life, I would always see and talk to the old timers, and they would always talk about, you know, they hit their knees in the morning and pray. And you know, early on in my program, I think just because I was at a young age, I used to pray, like, I'd get up and I'd lay in bed and I'd just end up falling back asleep, and or I'd be praying on the way to work, you know, help me, please, you know, like, as I'm rushing because I'm just a horrible employee at those times. And just not fully immersing my time, you know, with the Lord and my higher power. And what ended up happening about a year ago, I just got these crazy urges to, like, do 200 push-ups a day. And prior, before I do them, I get on the floor, I get on my knees, I pray, you know, for about 20 to 30 minutes, you know. And it's never anything for myself, which is the most miraculous thing for me, because it was always for me. So I'm more important than anyone in this room. Like, that's how I looked at myself, you know. And it's such a wonderful thing to pray for others, you know what I mean? And then, you know, like, my mother, for example, she's operating, her kidney's operating at like 19%, and she has to get put on dialysis. But prior to that, she was in the hospital for like 10 to 12 days, I think it was. And, you know, she slowly started getting better. And all I did was visit her, make her laugh, and pray. You know, so there's to me, there has always been truth and value within, you know, God or a form of higher power or whatever it is you want to believe in. But I like to say God, Heavenly Father or whatever. And, you know, for a long time, I used baby Jesus. That was another one. But I just like to call him God now. And it's such a powerful thing. You know what I mean? I get all these crazy opportunities. And nothing like this would have ever happened if I never, ever just fully gave myself to this program. But it wasn't easy, you know. I had the stubbornness of a mule, and, you know, I was restless, irritable, and discontent for the first 4 years of my sobriety, doing minimum to no work, sometimes nothing at all, just going to a meeting. You know what I mean? Going to a meeting, scowling at everybody, and then just leaving. And just in my head being like, this place sucks. You know what I mean? I don't have nothing to relate to. They're all old and this and that and wah, 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 cry me a river. And there was a lot of times where I, like, you know, when I first got to the rooms, I didn't work. I didn't have a job. My car was repoed. I had a skateboard and a backpack. And I skated to the La Puente Center at 6 a.m. for the early risers meeting. And I stayed there all day. And I was on a court card. Because my son's mother at the time was like, he's a drunk, he's an alcoholic, and he's abusive. And I was just looking at the judge like, no, I'm not. She does methamphetamine, you know? And they're like, oh, you're bad. And that moment, that person saved my life, because they did for me what I couldn't do for myself, which was tell the truth. And I got put on a court card. And my bright idea was, I'll be on this court card for 6 months. You know, I'll get everybody off my back. I'll get accepted back into the family, and I won't be the black sheep anymore. And everything will be okay, and I'll just go back to drinking, because I wasn't doing anything bad. And that was all a lie, and that was just me looking for a continuous wiggle room and not trying to look for growth or add any kind of weight or depth or value, not just into my lives, but the lives of those around me. And it was terrible. It was a terrible way of thinking. And you know, about before October, I think I came in, I don't know, like around January or something like that. And and I remember being on this court card, and, you know, when they would do the chips, they would say, does anybody got 30 days? And I'd raise my hand, I got 30 days. And I didn't even have 30 seconds, you know. If I walked out of the room, you could hear my backpack just clickety-clank as I would run out, you know. And that's how I, you know, that's how I did my get down for a while. And then I slowly started, you know, hearing similarities in people's stories in regards to, like, emotion and not feeling worthy of, and a lot of self-worth, and, you know, just that connection spiritually, you know, not the physical stuff, but just the spiritual stuff, you know, just spiritually broken and bankrupt. And I started realizing that, like, my true rock bottom was just that, you know. It wasn't the jail and the institutes. It was how I felt on the inside. And, you know, I started working with somebody, and that person took me to a group of guys on Monday nights, and we did book studies and potlucks. And, you know, from there, my life started taking off, but at a snail's pace, because I was still, like, I don't want to tell this person all the dirty things I did, you know. I want to try to save a little bit of face. And you can't do that, you know. You can't save your face and your butt at the same time, you know. And you gotta just find that one person, you know what I mean. And over the years, I've learned that you don't have to like everybody, but you have to love everybody, and you have to find that one, two, or three persons that you're like, hey, this is what I need help with in this moment of my life, you know. And it took 10 years to find, you know, a group of guys like that, because, you know, some people just don't stick around, you know. They tend to drift off, or friendships fade away. But if you see that person in the room again, you're like, oh my God, I missed you, and this and that. And it's a brotherhood, you know, in a familyhood that I've always, you know, imagined. Those first, like, year or two, I didn't go to Christmas at mom and dad's or my aunt's or anything like that. They were all at the La Puente Center, you know, Christmas with the drunks, you know. And it was a great time, it was potlucks and there was Halloween parties and New Year's parties, and it kind of helped me get reacclimated to like going and being around family when those social events did happen, and I did start getting invited back to the family. And now it's, I like to go back and forth because it's, my story is a lot of like, we hate you, never come back again. So like, are you going to be here? It's so-and-so's birthday and it's this and it's that. And can you bring this and can you bring that? And it's like, all I ever do is just say yes. I show up and I do it all over again. And, you know, a family member or friend calls, I pick up the phone and I say, let me see if I could get out of work. You know, let me see if I could do this. Let me move this around. Let me move that around. You know, it's just being reliable and being accountable, you know, being very disciplined. That's for me a lot of, as a young man, that's a lot of important things. That's things I try to teach my children and my kids. And, you know, there's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and, you know, it's this prayer, and it's like, God says, who shall I send? You know, and I say, here am I, send me, you know. And I think that's from Isaiah, first Isaiah chapter 6. And you know, it's just something that popped into my head, and I've been thinking about it a lot lately. And then if you look at like the way I try to do life now, the way my higher power has it laid out, it's like everything's already written, you just gotta walk through it. And you know, and I try to walk through things with like that whole faith without works is dead mentality. And I always do everything, you know, for everybody without expecting anything in return. There's times, you know, where it's just not pretty and it's not perfect. And in the back of my mind, it's like, I don't want to do this, you know, I don't want to do that. And I sit in bed sometimes. I'll wake up at like, you know, anywhere from 4 a.m. to 5 a.m. And I'll just sit there for like 20 minutes. And then I remind myself, like, you can't do this. You know what I mean? And you can't rest this early. You could rest at the end. And you know, I got all these little mantras and sayings and that I like to live by that help me, you know. I didn't get this program very fast. You know, I was a, you know, a lying chip taker. And that's how I did my program for a while until I, you know, finally went balls to the wall and threw it all away and got kicked out of the house. And then it was like I fought tooth and nail to come back, you know, and I just let my actions do the talking. And after that, you know, it's a whole hell of a lot better now. You know, I wouldn't want it any other way. I got keys to a company truck. You know, I got keys to the shop at the company I work for. And, you know, I got a company card. It's crazy, you know. And I'm entrusted with, like, all these different things. And it's just a testament to what this program can do and where it can take you. You know, that's... I believe that's really all I got. I want to thank Les for an opportunity to sit and speak. And yeah, that's it. Thanks.
All right.
I'm Les Alcoholic. Give Polly and Andrew a hand for a great meeting. And we need a lot of help cleaning up after the meeting. And we're looking for someone to bring water. Is that right? What else? We need some help. We need a coffee commitment. Anybody out there want to volunteer for coffee? Raise your hand. Get involved. Oh, where? Water? Who's bringing water?
We got a cooler.
We got a cooler?
Yeah.
Who could bring water? We have a cooler. We need some help. Okay. All right.
Not tap water.
We could do this still together, right? that's how we do. We put this on. We appreciate everybody that brings food here every week, and we got some good food. Let's give Tommy a hand for a great cook. Yeah. And then everybody else for that participates in this meeting. I'm your Grapevine rep, meeting in a print. And this one here is a pretty good one. It's this, the sounds of silence. There's a lot of power in silence. I never realized that. It took me a long time. I'm a slow learner too, Andrew. I'm still learning. I learned something from you tonight. And that's what it's all about. Being able to open my ears and listen more than talking, you know. And this is a great one. It's a special edition prayer and meditation. And so what we do is we give this out, you read it, and you bring it back, and then we recirculate it.
Like this, you bring it back.
Thank you so much. So anyway, the sound of silence and prayer and meditation. Who needs it? Who wants it? Come get it. Come on. Somebody has got to want it.
Christine, you
want to
fight over it?
Oh, Timmy boy.
Rochambeau.
Okay, here's one I just got recycled. Look, the spirit of AA. There's nothing stronger than one drunk talking to another drunk, sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Identification is everything. I mean, it kept me here for years. I mean, I'm not alone. I know that there's someone else on the planet that feels the way I do. When's a spaceship going to land and take me home, you know? But anyway, come on, Tina and Ron, and let's do this raffle.
Pick it up and go.
Let me get my tickets out in my high pocket.
So we need a lot of help afterwards taking the stuff to the truck and stuff. So, and if you want to volunteer for something, get involved. And don't forget the...
Hi, everyone. I'm Tina. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know if anybody... this is Hal's memorial. It's on the 27th. And there's a Zoom ID and password. And it's from 1 to 4 p.m. It's in Las Vegas, but we can go via Zoom. And this is the intergroup meeting. It's Saturday, not tomorrow, but the next Saturday. It's at 10:30 in the morning, and it's at the 502 Club. Come and support your local central office, your intergroup, and be a representative of your group. If you'd like to be of service, that's a great way to stay sober. Where's Ron?
Ron!
Oh, he's way over there. Okay.
Find a paper hanging out.
Get your tickets out. Thank you so much for participating each week in our raffle, and thank you for coming and bringing something. Thank you so much.
Ron made me.
Jay, come here. Come here, Jay.
Remember, Ron, hold the tabbed one.
Hold on.
Take it easy now.
There's a ticket.
All right, good.
Uh-oh.
Hey, what? Punk rocker. Get it right.
Don't forget. Jay, aim a pick on you.
Just do the raffle.
Come on.
Take it up.
Pick a ticket. Go on.
Well, I got to get the
he
goods.
Need some help.
Melba gave us this tonight. It's Legoland. We got a Great Responsibility. It's a history book. In all of our affairs, that's an Al-Anon book. Don't we all need Al-Anon?
Yep.
Yeah, it's the secret to my serenity. Keep my mouth shut and mind my own business. Okay, 0305. 0305.
0305?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nick.
Nick's going to go to Camp Sealy and recycle this. What would you like?
In all our affairs.
All right.
Well, an honor.
Awesome.
Nice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody? Legoland? Okay. 0322.
What?
0322.
Yeah.
All right, Javier.
I got one of my tickets here.
Oh, you did? Oh, that was nice.
Don't go away. Don't go away, guy.
Okay, what would you like? 12 and 12?
12 and 12.
Came to believe? Our great responsibility?
Our great responsibility.
Wonderful.
Appreciate it.
Okay, we got two more. Okay. 0445. 0445.
I'm taking them all the time, Jay.
Oh, I got 0445 right here.
This is rigged.
Hey, what's that? Here,
this is rigged.
I shake it up.
It's rigged.
I shake it up.
No, give it away.
Can't be rare. I shake it up.
I won it.
I okay. Shake it up.
All right. One more. A 12 and 12. And our Legoland.
Lego.
12 and 12 and Legoland.
Lego.
4, 6, 1. 6, 4, 6,
here, I know how to read. Okay, 0, 4, 6, 0. 0, 4, 6, 0. All right. He's going to Legoland. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great rest of your day. Thank you guys for letting us be of service, and thank you for supporting our group every week and coming, bringing something, helping us clean up our sobriety station. And we will have somebody read. We will have somebody read the promises and pray us out.
Can you take me back?
You want to read?
Nope.
Okay. Anybody want to read the promises? Come on up. Thank you. We really do appreciate this fellowship that we have here. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming out tonight. Thank you.
Tony Alcoholic. The promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Work, work, work.
Now, after a moment of silence for the alcoholic that still suffers in and out of these parks, the innocent children caught in a crossfire, please join me in the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thy is kingdom, power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Come back, it works!
Thank you, my
husband. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You crochet?
Yes, I do.
Like a mad lady.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, my mom taught me how to knit.
A long time ago?
Yeah. Yeah, ever since I was like
The truck just grabbed a chair.